Hello, everybody. Welcome to the PDX Beat Podcast, the culture show that keeps a finger on the pulse of all things Portland. I'm your host, Amado Lumba, and for this week's beat, we'll be taking a little road trip back to Portland's past, as experienced and influenced by, quote, the most interesting woman that ever lived in Oregon, unquote. Our focus for today is Dr. Marie Equi, whose story brilliantly unfolds in author Michael Hellquist's new book entitled Marie Equi, Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions. But before we dive into the book and learn more about our colorful protagonist, let's find out a little bit about the author, native Portlander Michael Hellquist.
What made you move to San Francisco?
It was San Francisco. But that was also back in 1980, and Portland was not the hip, cool spot to be. So it was mostly that. I wanted to be in a larger city. Mm-hmm. And there was that. There was the fact that I had come out as being gay, so there was some draw there. There wasn't too much happening here with gay people, gay lesbian people, other than some bars. So there was some attraction to that as well.
Mm-hmm. And so any compulsion to come back to Portland?
You know, much of my family is still here. My mother and sister and brother-in-law, and most of the family except for one nephew stayed in the Portland metro area. So I visit a lot. And every time that I come, or that I come with my husband, Dale, we always play this game a little bit. Well, could we live here? Or would this be right? And there are lots of times that we think there's so much about being nice here that,
you know. Like the forest.
The outdoors, the street trees, the people are a little bit slower. There's not quite as much crazy driving and parking problems as we have in San Francisco. So we're drawn to it. The weather's a bit of a stumbling block, but it's changed since I grew up here.
Yeah.
And these heat spikes, more than spikes, these long periods of heat that Portland has had, just didn't happen then.
Right. We can blame El Nino
for
that.
Right. I'm accustomed to 75 is about my max, and I'm comfortable.
Right. Right on.
90 is way over the limit for me.
Right. But there's also those microclimates in San Francisco, I heard.
Yeah, so. There are. You can be in the fog belt. You can be in the sun belt. We're kind of right in between the two of those.
I have a lot of relatives in Daly City.
Oh,
I'm Filipino,
okay.
So
yeah,
that's like little Manila.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, good. So that actually answers my question about what the Portland connection is.
Longtime family. I went to grade school here, and then actually I left at age 14 to go to Mount Angel Seminary for 4 years when I thought I wanted to become a Catholic priest, and that lasted for high school, and then I left, and I went to the University of Oregon for 2 years, and then I had this urge to see more, and there was a transfer program with the State University of New York at Albany, so the tuitions were similar. So I did that, and I moved to New York. Everyone in New York was saying, why would you leave Oregon? This was just when Oregon was beginning to be popular as this green paradise. And they said, why would you leave there to come to New York? Yeah. It was a change. It was something new.
I really enjoyed the story of Dr. Marie Equi. First of all, am I pronouncing that correct?
It's Equi.
Equi.
Yeah, okay. Like equity.
All right, equity. All right.
Yeah.
I've been pronouncing it wrong in my head.
I did for many years, too, but then I finally found out how she said it.
All right.
Yeah.
How did you find that out, actually?
Actually, there was a newspaper article, and she corrected someone in this article, and she said, she was perturbed, and she said, no, it's like equity. Okay.
I read somewhere that you were drawn to her based on you read about the account in the Dalles where she horsewhipped the minister.
Yes.
Now, I know you weren't, you didn't read that from the Huffington Post, so how did you come upon that?
Right. Well, it was my first exposure to Marie Ekwe and her story, and I found it on a website based in Portland for the Gay Lesbian Archives of the Pacific Northwest, GLAPN, GLAPN. And I saw this story about the horse whipping in the Dalles by this young woman who was 21 years old at the time, who later became known to be lesbian, who was defending her girlfriend who hadn't been paid her full salary for her school teaching job. And they tried and tried to get the superintendent to pay what he owed her. He owed her another $100. This was in 1893 in the Dalles. And finally, when he didn't, they just got exasperated. And Marie Ekwe decided to take a horsewhip to him. And he had an office in the bank building, which is still there in downtown the Dalles. And she paced back and forth in the middle of the day, like in 95-degree weather, paced back and forth for him to come out. There was only one exit. And finally he did, and well, basically she attacked him with the horsewhip. She got in a few blows before he started fighting back. And it turns out, not only was he a school superintendent, but he was also a Baptist minister. But it was interesting because the people in the town largely took her side, because this superintendent was involved in land fraud. So he was kind of a scoundrel. So they really didn't mind that she was taking after him, something that they wished they had done. So she became a bit of a hero for doing it that day. And but with that episode, one of the things that I think historically is important is that it was the first time in Oregon, and I believe the whole Pacific Northwest, that an intimate same-sex relationship involving two women was in the public or public discussion, because this was in all the newspapers in the Dalles and in the Oregonian, and it showed up in the San Francisco Examiner. So it got a lot of attention, and here were these two women who the newspaper reports described as being inseparable, and that they had this rapt attention and ardor for each other, and just simply wanted to be left alone to live on their homestead together. So that was pretty remarkable for 1893, the Dalles and in Oregon. So her courage and determination really got my attention, besides it was so sensational. And then I just started researching more about her and found, beyond the sensational, she was a very remarkable woman involved in so many different causes that she felt passionately about. She started out as a little bit more mainstream in the progressive era, which was early 1900s Portland, and that involved things like advocating for women to get the right to vote, for women's suffrage, and for an 8-hour workday, and for state funding of the university. They were progressive issues, but hardly radical. And then she happened upon this cannery strike in East Portland at about Southeast 8th and Belmont. And she got pulled into that. And at one point, the Portland police force attacked the women strikers, and she got clubbed. And that's what radicalized her. And then after that point, she got involved with the Industrial Workers of the World, IWW, and its members were called Wobblies. And she aligned herself with them, became more involved in labor strikes and free speech fights in downtown Portland. She also advocated that birth control information be distributed to women, especially working class women who had a harder time getting it. It was against the law to do that. She ended up spending a night in jail with Margaret Sanger just for handing out pamphlets. So she became more and more involved with several issues, the labor unions and anywhere where she felt that people were being downtrodden and taken advantage of.
If I can challenge you to just describe Dr. Marie Equi with one word, what would that be?
One word, I would say courageous.
That certainly is all over the book. It didn't seem like she backed down from any fight.
She didn't. I mean, I guess another word would be like fearless in the causes that she worked on, and to the point that you'd think, really, this slight woman, a fairly small build, would go in the midst of a Preparedness Day parade, which was a super nationalist parade leading up to World War I. It had this patriotic fervor. And she entered that parade as one dissenter amid 15,000 people. And she got beat up for it. And she knew that she probably would. And she still did it.
Feisty is probably
very feisty.
Yeah, she's 5'3", I think I read in the book. She's 5'3", 165 pounds, and all that energy and all that spirit.
Yeah. It's just, so it was her courage, that boldness, almost risk-taking nature that she had. But the other side is that she was really compassionate about people. And like, she would do anything for her friends and even sometimes people she didn't know. She was very generous if people needed financial help. She was very generous. And she felt strongly about these things. But we don't want to paint her as a saint, because like all of us, she was very complicated. I'm sure with people who knew her well, she drove them crazy sometimes, because she was oftentimes demanding, and just a lot of energy to be around. You probably would want a break at some point from dealing with her. But she had a very big heart, and although she was feisty and courageous, I think she also felt vulnerable. And I mean, no one likes to go to jail and feel that vulnerable in those situations, and she did it. And I think she also had a desire to be well-liked by others, but obviously some of the things that she got involved in meant she was also unpopular with large segments of society.
Do you think that if Dr. Marie Equi did not answer the call to move west and remained in the East Coast, if she would have had as influential a life as she did here in the West?
That's a good question. It's hard to say, because right when she moved west, which is in 1892, she had so few options. She had been... Her parents had insisted that she drop out of high school to work in a textile mill in New Bedford. And it was pretty miserable work. And she did that for 2 years, and she really, really wanted a different life. And she was ambitious. She was, you know, in her late teens, and she loved to go to school and study. And there just were no opportunities in New Bedford. And then also at about that time, she realized that she was attracted to women, which made her different. Also meant she couldn't rely on getting married and having a husband to support her. So she had to do something for herself financially. And I'm not sure what she would have done with herself there. I think she must have been thrilled at the opportunity that came up for her to move to this homestead outside the Dalles. And then at some point during the 5 years she was there, she decided to self-study her way into medical school, which opened her life.
Like us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/thePDXBeat. Find us on Twitter as @ThePDXBeat. Email us at thepdxbeat@gmail.com. And check out our website at www.thepdxbeat.com.
Once you decided to explore Dr. Marie Epke's life, and you went down the rabbit hole, so to speak.
Yes.
And I know, and I read somewhere as well where some maybe detractors may have said, "Oh, you're not going to find a lot of stuff on her," but you,
right.
Thankfully you did. But was there a point where you went, you know, threw your hands in the air and said, there's nothing more, or this is not what I really want to write? Or was it always, were you always on the path?
Well, partly what you're referring to, or what you mentioned, was that there was an assumption among many writers and historians that a full-length biography of Marie Epke was not possible because there weren't enough primary sources, meaning her journal articles, say if she had it, or writing in a journal, or correspondence, or anything in her own words. And I felt both a little intimidated and challenged by that. And I wanted to see, well, let's see, actually, if there is or isn't. And I was fortunate early on to come across a number of sources and materials that did document her voice, which kept me going. And it was surprising to me how much was out there. It did take a fair amount of digging, but there was quite a few records that I found, and some of her correspondence. And also, because she was so public in her life, involved with so many conflicts, I found over 300 newspaper articles where she was either mentioned or described, and several where she was interviewed, where it really sounds like, yeah, this is her voice. I hear it from one interview to another. It's not the reporter making something up. I recognize the voice. So I stuck with it pretty steady. I think one of the obstacles I ran into, since this is my first biography, is initially I didn't know when to stop researching, because it's fascinating, and when you discover something, it's such a thrill. You kind of want that thrill again to see what else might be out there. But at some point, you have to stop and write the damn book. So that was one of the things I had to learn.
And as you were learning about Dr. Epke, did you feel a little protective of her?
I did. You know, and I think this probably happens for anyone that writes a biography. My protagonist has been written about in brief articles before, and after I've done all this research, I found that some of the things that had been written earlier, well, just weren't accurate. But some of those seminal articles keep getting repeated, because that was the source, and even now, I come across something new that may be online and someone has just written it, and they're referring to something that was written 30, 40 years ago. So it's not so much I get annoyed, I just wish there was a way to turn that around. Maybe this book will do that, and I'm sure other people will find things in the book and they say, well, that's not quite the exact interpretation. So it's an ongoing process.
How long did it take you to complete the book?
10 years, but that wasn't working full time on it. I also had, at least on two occasions, two different breaks of 2 years each, where I was working on other projects. I got very much involved in the Safe Streets movement and bicycle advocacy, and that really, I became very much involved with that. And then there was another period when I was trying to develop a community center in my neighborhood in San Francisco that was challenging, demanding on time, and I got to the point where I said, okay, I have to stop everything else and just do this and complete it.
Was there anything that you found out about her that did not make it on the book?
There hasn't been any major episode that didn't make it into the book. There were lots of anecdotes and stories I would have liked to have told, but it's just I couldn't fit them in the page count. More recently, I found an episode with her that I didn't even know about it. And this was like a few weeks ago. The book's obviously been published. And I found that in 1914, she was in San Francisco for this national meeting of women concerned about getting women the right to vote. Nationally, women didn't get the right to vote until 1920, so this was a few years earlier. And she was at this convention, and I was reading in the San Francisco Chronicle, all of a sudden there was this headline that Dr. Marie Equi, a suffragist, had taken to the air. She was in this airplane going over Ocean Beach, which is sort of the city beach in San Francisco, and tossing out suffrage flyers as she did so.
Wow.
And this was a time when women weren't flying. They weren't stunt flyers. It was just kind of unheard of, and I don't think she was the pilot, but nevertheless, she was in the plane, and I thought, oh, that's such a great story. I wish I could have put that in the book.
And was there anything that you were hesitant to include for fear that it might, I don't know, take away from what you're trying to, from the message?
Not so much that sense. There was some information about Marie Equi, who at one point in her life adopted an infant, and she and her girlfriend raised that young girl. There was some information that later, as that young girl grew up and was a teenager, that the relationship between them was kind of troubled, which, you know, mother and daughter conflict, it wasn't that unusual. But there are a couple of things that I came across that I just thought, I don't really have corroboration that happened, so I don't want things just to be speculative. So there are things like that I left out and thought, you know, they're sort of interesting, but they're not crucial to the story. And I didn't make it out as if they had an ideal relationship, but I just didn't provide the details.
Do you see this being a movie at some point?
Yes.
Would you be open to that?
Yes. My publisher would say yes. I think she is such a remarkable personality, and she was involved in so many really momentous events in our country's history that she's kind of a natural for a story being told in video or on film. And yeah, I'm definitely going to look into those possibilities.
Yeah, I think she's a fascinating character in history, and then more so Portland history, which again I enjoy a lot. And it would be a thrill, I think, to see this in film. You know, and especially as I was reading it, and just kind of imagining how they would depict certain scenes, I definitely would be interested. And it was interesting to see a part of the whole San Francisco earthquake that happened in the 1900s. Like, people wouldn't necessarily know this story unless
right.
it's told.
Right.
You know,
it's been interesting. I've been giving several book talks in the Portland area and in the San Francisco area, partly because I live there, but also Marie Equi had a lot of involvement with San Francisco. And people are amazed. In Portland as well, people are amazed they had never heard of her before.
Right. Like, count me among that.
Yeah. How could she be so hidden from history? And that was one of the things that drove me to write about her, was that this was someone that wasn't well known, who should be. And I think partly because she was... Sometimes I talk about her as being one of those marginalized people, which would be women and minorities, working class, sexual minorities, people whose story just doesn't get told. And And when the stories aren't told, we lose some of our sense of who we are and who we are as a nation. And in her case, we don't have any other example of a LGBT person living and active during that time. Say like from the late 1890s up till about 1920, none really in Oregon at all. Very, very few in San Francisco. None as prominent as her. She was considered the most prominent woman activist who was known to be lesbian on the whole West Coast up until the point where she went to prison. So I was really drawn to telling a story like that. And both because she was someone that wasn't known and also because I thought it was really important for LGBT people to, in a sense, know that we were there. You know, we have history that goes back that far and in this part of the world. And I think the other fascinating thing about her is this book certainly, although it refers to her outlaw passions, it's not just about her relationships with women. And I think there's a lesson there for us of whatever sexual identity today is for those who are able to move beyond our personal daily concerns and get engaged with issues that affect everyone. And she certainly did that. I think she's inspiring and a model for people today.
Would you have been friends with Dr. Marie Equi if you had been the same timeline?
Yes, okay. I would have been friends. I doubt if I'd been a roommate. I think she was a very intense personality who you would find fascinating and sometimes exasperating. And, you know, you would need some downtime.
I'm sorry, going back to the movie thing real quick. Who would you see playing her?
When I started on the book, the actress I had in mind was Susan Sarandon.
And great choice.
As it turns out, I recently learned that Susan Sarandon, her ancestors were related to the Equi family.
Oh,
so
wow.
She's part of the larger clan of Equi family people from northern Italy. I haven't reached to her yet to tell her that, but I'm hoping that might be a little nudge.
Yeah, I would say so.
Other people have suggested younger actresses like Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Ah, she would be good too.
Who are some of the others? Jennifer Lawrence. You know, it would be kind of a...
I would like to see Jennifer Lawrence actually as Harriet.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, Harriet Speckert, her girlfriend, who was not so politically active as Marie, but dealt with Marie over several years. So I just think there's a good story there, and let's see where it goes.
And I would agree. Thank you for writing the book and telling the story of Dr. Marie Equi. It certainly opened my eyes to a history of Portland that I wasn't aware of. And again, thank you for putting all in a package so I don't have to do any research.
Oh, well, good.
You can find out more information about Michael and his other writings on his website at www.michaelhellquist.com. And I highly recommend that you get your hands on a copy of his new book. If you're a fan of history, especially Portland or Oregon history, and learning about unsung heroes, Marie Equi, Radical Politics and Outlaw Passions will be an enjoyable read. Available now from Oregon State University Press, which published the book, Powell's Books, Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and other book retailers. And that's our show this week, folks. Music for this episode, courtesy of local musician Sweet Nothing. Make sure to subscribe to this show so you never miss out on any new episodes. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, or wherever you download quality podcasts. This has been a presentation of The PDX Beat. I'm Amadou Lumba. Thanks for tuning in.